A four-star defensive back's dismissed from the team. Let's talk portal QBs and NIL. And can this Hoops team make a run? It's time for another barn takeover.
In the world full of podcasts, he's the undisputed heavyweight champion of hot takes, an Auburn sports homer, master of the bug, and message board legend. Get your buttons buttoned and your hats flattened, because the Top Button Podcast is about to kick off, and you don't want to miss your courtside seat. Now, here's your host, Charlie Five.
Yes, sir, we're back. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Rush, a.k.a. Charlie Five, and we're ready to get after it. Happy Thursday. The game is getting closer. The Saturday with Vandy, a big game, and we're going to talk about it today. We're going to talk a little bit about it today, but it's time for one of my favorite parts of the week, a barn takeover where members of the barnauburn.com submit questions and they drive the show. I'd love for you guys listening out there, you guys could be a part of the action as well. When we do the live shows, there's so many chats that it's hard to get up to all the questions. So I want to give our members a chance to ask away, fire off, and honestly create the content for the show. And they've been fantastic. I get so many comments about loving the questions, loving the answers, and just the interaction is a ton of fun. So before we get started, we got to give a shout out to mybookie.ag. Use coupon code NEXTROUND on your initial deposit for a double up bonus. They'll double up whatever deposit you put in there. So give them $200. They're going to give you another $200 back to play with. That line keeps creeping towards Auburn. My bookie's begging you, absolutely begging you to pick Vandy. So bet at your own risk. There's lines for everything. You can do teasers, parlays, round robins, all the good stuff that you love to do. That's a ton of fun. Check it out, mybookie.ag. Without further ado, we're going to jump in. We got a bunch of questions. So let's roll on right now. Let's jump in. Tomcat on the tube, a good buddy of mine, asks, now that it's public, if Antonio Kite is dismissed, and maybe not only him, do you think that was part of the locker room issues we had heard about? So obviously the news came out yesterday. Antonio Kite was dismissed from the team. Very vague as far as the reasons as to why he was dismissed. I think some said that he was not showing up to meetings or practices or whatever. I don't really want to speculate on it, on exactly the reason. But the question is, do I think that was part of the issues in the locker room? And I think that goes back to Hugh saying, I'm no longer going to be Mr. Nice Guy, essentially. I've got to coach the only way I know how to coach. And if that hurts some feelings, it just kind of is what it is. If kids want to leave for the portal, I can't coach with that fear anymore. It's just got to be how I do it, and whatever happens, happens. So the question, do I think this dismissal was part of that? Indirectly, it could have been. And I want to say that I don't think that Antonio Kite was necessarily a problem. I don't think he was like creating issues, but in being, I'm going to play the best guy, I'm going to play the guy that's going to do the things that I want him to do, you started to see, obviously, Jay Crawford take over. You're starting to see Kinsley Faustin get more snaps. And Antonio Kite didn't play a single snap, I don't believe, against Kentucky. And he only played five or six the week prior. So he saw his playing time dwindling, and I think that could have been discouraging and created some issues. But overall, I don't necessarily think it's a issue of Antonio Kite's a bad guy. I think it's just, you know, for whatever reason, it's not working out. I assume he's probably going to go in the portal and go elsewhere. So we'll see what happens with him. But there definitely does seem to be a little bit of a culture shift. Even if this is not 100% related, there definitely does seem to be a little bit of a culture shift towards, hey, you got to get after it or you're not going to play. We're going to coach hard. We're going to And if you don't like it, that just kind of, that's reality here now. So I think there's going to be a lot of people that say, well, why wasn't he doing that from the beginning? And it's just different now. And all coaches, I think, especially coaches that have been coaching for a while, are sort of learning on the fly how to navigate this portal era and how to navigate players where you have no leverage. So it's just going to be interesting. And, you know, further part of the question, there could be another dismissed. I'm not going to speculate on who that is. But I don't think that one's – I think that one's more personal. I don't think that one's related to the culture change or the way that Hugh's coaching. I don't necessarily think that one's part of that one either. This one kind of piggybacks off of that. Oso de Miami, one of our very active posters. Will the new spots open up new talent for freshman recruiting, or will they replaced in the transfer portal? You know, that's a really good question. Roster spots in general, I'll leave it up. Roster spots in general are sort of up in the air still because of this whole 85 scholarships to 105 scholarships deal, and understanding exactly when that's going to hit. To answer the question directly, I think it could be either. I really do. It'll just be how does the class end up? You got 27 commits right now. You're probably gonna, I would imagine, lose a couple just from sheer numbers, especially in a couple of the position groups. So that would drop, if you lose two, that drops you to 25. You probably try to add at least three or four more. So if you add four more, that puts you at 29. So if you're at 29 or 30, that's probably what you're looking at as far as the high school class goes. And then portal, I think you want to take somewhere in the neighborhood of eight to 10 is probably what they're looking to add. So obviously this is going to free up some spots. So I think it would just be what's the best player you can get in either one of those slots. I think that's kind of how it would go. I don't think it necessarily means that spot's open, so it has to go to the portal, or that spot's open, it has to go to high school. I think it could be either. And I think those numbers I mentioned, that's kind of going to be what you're looking at. But good question. Moving on to the next one. This is a really good question. Okay. Because this has been a big talking point all season, talking about Cam Ward, talking about the portal quarterback from why didn't we take one? We should have taken one. Who would it have cost us? Blah, 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 blah. Tiger Fan 8, would all of the 2024 class talent be on the team if they would have gotten a transfer portal quarterback? Okay. Seems like the extra funds that were left has built a better roster for the future. Okay. So that question only applies to the top two guys on the list, okay? And I've mentioned this a lot of times, Riley Leonard and Cam Ward, okay? Riley Leonard would have been touching $1 million, and then Cam Ward would have been well over $1 million, but I don't think Cam Ward was ever a realistic option. I don't think Cam Ward was ever coming to the SEC, and I think he made a really good decision. So let's just say that they decide to go and give Riley, let's just decide that they say, okay, we're going to play ball. We're going to give Riley $1 million, Riley Leonard $1 million. Because after that, I think the whole portal thing, after those two guys, it was pretty much a crapshoot. And I get it. We can hindsight it to death. Kyle McCord, this guy, that guy, I get it. Okay. I understand there's other guys they could have gone to, but I think after that, they just felt like it's a crapshoot. Let's just regroup and build around Thorne, and just it is what it is. Okay. We missed out on the guy we wanted. And you know, that just is what it is. Okay. So when you look at the timing of when kids sign and when portal kids sign, the high school kids of the 2024 class were already most all in the boat. They're already signed. They signed in December. Okay. So those guys more than likely would have still been here. Okay, because you can't sign Cam Ward and then say, oh, by the way, Perry Thompson, oh, by the way, Cam Coleman, we can't take you anymore. You know, we don't have that anymore. You can't do that. Okay, so what it would have affected is the 2025 class. What if you would have gotten, let's just hypothetically, you have to shell out what you shell out for Cam Warden, you get him. What it really would have affected is this 2025 class. And you probably don't get a Keandre Lambert Smith. And you probably don't get maybe a Kieron Crawford. And you may, who knows, you may not have gotten even an Isaiah Rakes in the spring. Okay. It would have affected everything forward. So I think that a lot of people came to onto Victory or whoever and said, hey, we want to put in for a quarterback. And they said, well, we'll try that. It didn't really work out. Let's take that and let's move it. And let's really stack this 2025. Let's really stack this 2025 class. So that's what's led to, I think, that early success, those early commits, that early getting all those guys in and building this massive class, the highest ranked class in the history of Auburn, modern recruiting. I think not going all in on a portal quarterback last year has helped this recruiting class this upcoming year, and also primed itself for the portal in December, which is going to be, I think, should be very, very fruitful, be very, very fun for Auburn. So to answer the question directly, would it have affected the 2024 class? No, because of the timing. They would have already been signed. You can't go back on a sign. Once a kid signs, you can't really go back on that. So it wouldn't have affected that, but I think it would have greatly affected the 2025 class and what you have in the boat right now. I think it would have made a huge impact on what you were able to do so far in this class. Let's keep going. Before we hit the rest of them, we got to give a shout out to my boy Ford Stokes with Active Wealth. Look, you've got a 401k, I'm sure. You've got savings, I'm sure. You better if you're responsible. But how do you know it's not performing? How do you know it's performing at its maximum level? How do you know you're getting everything out of your dollar? Ford Stokes is the guy to verify that for you. Go to retirementresults.com/plan and get your custom portfolio analysis absolutely free. Only if it's like a $1,500 value. Ford will do it for you at no cost to you. There's no harm in double checking. And another thing is you can make sure that your money doesn't go towards Alabama's NIL. You make sure that, I guarantee you, it's only going to go towards Auburn if you work with Ford. Huge Auburn fan. Make a good friend at the same time. Tell them War Eagle. Tell them we sent you Ford Stokes with Active Wealth. All right, let's keep going. Next question. Here's a good one. Talking about Vandy. WDE Jack 24. Do you think we will open up the passing game some, especially since they will most certainly be targeting Jarquez? Can Vandy stop our explosive plays and limit Jarquez? So Vandy's defense, if you just look at them from a statistical standpoint, is bottom half of the SEC. And I know you're thinking, how is that possible? Okay, here's how Vandy's defense benefit or works, okay? Their offense holds the ball so long and frustrates head coaches and frustrates everybody, especially on the offense, because they're sitting there and they can't get on the field. They frustrate everybody into the sense where it creates a little bit of a panic, a little bit of a rush. It's the first quarter. They got the ball first, and they had the ball for 12 minutes. We haven't seen the ball at all. We got to make the most of this possession. So it creates a sense of urgency on offense to where maybe you're playing outside of your game plan because you're thinking you got to maximize possession. So it puts a little bit of added pressure on you. And I think it leads to people playing outside of themselves, making mistakes. They don't turn the ball over. They don't turn teams over very much at all, but they don't turn the ball over. Okay. So they just grind the clock, 3 yards here, 5 yards there, 2 yards there, boom, first down. Like they just do little bitty things and they'll get first downs by like a half a yard. Like you're measuring and it's not like they're just ripping off big gains, but that offense puts your offense in a panic, because if you can't slow them down and get them off the field, They're going to take the clock deep into the, they're going to take the play clock deep in, you know, deep, snap it with just a few seconds left. They're going to eat tons and tons of clock. And then when you get on the field, you feel like I got to make the most of this scenario, because if we don't, we're not going to have enough possessions. We got, you know, whatever. And you start playing outside of yourself. And I think that's where their defense benefits so much. So to answer the question directly, statistically, if Auburn shows just a little bit of balance on both sides of the ball and doesn't get outside of themselves, doesn't freak out, runs Jarquez the adequate amount, like which is whatever the situation provides, and then is able to, you know, hit some plays when you need to in the passing game, I think they'll be fine. But again, can you get off the field on defense? Can you shorten their possessions, shorten their time of possession? Can you get, again, getting off the field? That's what's going to be key, because their defense benefits from their offense, because their offense puts pressure on the opposing offense. That's how they have success. Because, again, if you just look at the statistics, you're like, man, we should blow this team out. They're the bottom half, especially versus conference opponents. They're the bottom half in everything. Rushing yards, passing yards, total yards, yards per play, everything. They gave up 8.5 yards a play against Alabama. 8.5 yards per play versus Alabama, and won. They won the game because they kept the ball for dadgum ever, and then put Alabama in this like pressure. Okay, we got to be explosive. We got to get the ball down the field because we hadn't had the ball forever, and I think that's what ends up playing into their hands. That's the way they want. That's the way they want you to play. Hope that answers your question. Brian Beatty, one of the regulars, also asked really great questions. Do you think this is a hoops question, which I love? Just had a hoops, really good hoops pod with Zep Jasper. We do that 2 times a week on Wednesdays and Fridays. And a lot of good stuff. Zep has some incredible insight, but we talked about the Furman game. And I think we actually talked about this. Brian Beatty asked, do you think this team is built to make a run in the NCAA tournament, or do you think we win a lot of games but might be lacking the star power to make a deep tournament run? You know, look at UConn last year, and I think by and large this is kind of the rule versus the exception, but it seems like older teams and teams with really good guard play, especially from the point guard position, are teams that make runs in the tournament, period. That seems to be – you may lose some games in the regular season, but when you get to the tournament play, when it's pressure, when it's got to score, when it's can't turn the ball over in key situations, guard play is key. Okay, and this team Auburn has is one of the I would imagine if you looked across the board as far as age of team, I would imagine Auburn has to be one of the older teams in college basketball. Doesn't mean they're old and bad. They're all old and very good players. Obviously, you got Jani Broom, who could be the best player in the country. But what about the guards? Okay, you have Denver Jones and you have JP Pegues. Both of them have played a ton of basketball. JP's obviously making the transition up to the SEC. And then Denver Jones has a year under his belt at the SEC level and is, you know, kind of primed to have a pretty good year this year. Both of them shot the ball kind of poorly against Furman. I think it's the exception versus the rule. I say all that to say, pieces, if there is a cookie cutter like template, if there's a template of what it takes to make deep runs in the tournament, I think this Auburn team has it. I think this Auburn team fits the criteria of what it takes to make a run in the tournament. Now, does it all come together? Are they all going to be able to play together as a team? Are you going to have some issues with, you know, discipline or whatever, like you did that cost you the Yale game? That's all, like, we'll have to see how all that plays out. But as far as the makeup of the team, the two point guards are old and experienced. They're very talented. your two guards, you have another one that you're going to have Miles Kelly, who's played a ton of basketball, who has the ability to score. And you got a young hot shot coming off the bench. You go over to the three, you got Chad Baker-Mazzara, who we know, if he can keep his head on straight, is a very, very explosive player. You got Chris Moore that can come off the bench and be exceptional as well. And then you got seasoned at the four, and then obviously you got Brim and Cardwell at the five. You have the makeup of a team that can make a big run. Now, can you put all the pieces together and make it happen? That remains to be seen. But as far as the template goes, you check all the boxes. So we'll see. Going on, Auburn Eagle 96. This is a great question because we do hear this all the time. What is so difficult about running the right route as a wide receiver? Even the Bammers are complaining about doing the same thing. Look, Auburn Eagle, it sounds like you played ball, kind of like played high school ball, kind of like I played high school ball. They gave you a number. If you're a wide receiver, they gave you a number. That number equaled a route, and you just ran that route. That was it. So if you got the seven, if you're running the seven, the corner route, you just go out there and run a quarter route. Now, you may stem it a little bit different. You may break it off a little bit different based off of the coverage, but you're not running anything other than a corner, you're worried if you don't run the right route, will you ever play again? You're worried if you run anything other than a corner, will you ever play again? So what's so difficult? Well, college offenses and offenses in general are vastly more complicated. And our wide receivers are no different than other teams' wide receivers, where you have options, you know, and think about this. So the receiver has an option, and the quarterback has to know what that option is, and they both have to see the same thing. They both have to feel the same thing for it to work. So there's keys that you look at. There's rules that you look at to decide what route you run. The wide receiver has to make that correct decision, and the quarterback has to make that correct decision. So when you have younger guys, and we're talking about, we'll go to the interception in the Kentucky game. Hugh said Malcolm ran the wrong route. Now, we don't know exactly what that route should have been, but Peyton clearly looks directly to Malcolm to start that drive, and Malcolm's not where he feels like he should be. So Malcolm looked inexperienced, okay? He looked at that play. He diagnosed where he should have gone, what the decision should have been, and he chose incorrectly based off of, I guess, in theory, I guess maybe Peyton could have chosen incorrectly, but Hugh specifically said Malcolm ran the wrong route. So when I walk up to the line as a receiver in this offense, and in any offense in college football, it seems like, I get my seven called. That seven's probably got at least two options off of it that I'm charged with diagnosing where I'm supposed to go or what route I'm supposed to run. So I think that's probably more of what you're seeing. I don't think that is definitely what you're seeing. You're seeing guys that just aren't quite there yet in their development and in their reps to be able to read offenses yet. I'm sorry, read defenses yet and make the correct decisions. So that's understandable also with Alabama learning a new offense. And if their receivers are running incorrect routes, they're learning something different because people know this, but when Nick Saban hired an offensive coordinator, that offensive coordinator had to learn Alabama's terminology. So they had to call their plays, but call them with Alabama's terminology. So it's only one person learning something new versus, you know, 22 or 11 on offense plus all, you know, everybody else. So imagine you've done that for 15 years, and then now you come in and it's a completely different deal. It's completely different terminology. I can see where that could definitely be an issue. So I hope that answered your question. Last one, we're going to get out of here. SRG, I'm going to say it, Sarge AU93. Do you expect Alec McPherson to handle all field goal attempts moving forward? Well, you saw on that availability report, bless his heart, he's listed as questionable. So I don't know if something's happened this week. I don't know if that's something they're just going to do every – they have to do every week because of the new rules of putting out this availability. I don't know if that's just something they have to do now. But he's listed as questionable. And I think the goal is obviously for him to kick all the kicks, definitely all the shorter ones. He did kick a little bit deeper one last week. So I think they want him to kick all the extra points, all the field goals, but it's all up to, you know, his health. It's all down to can he handle it? You know, not handle it. That's bad. He can't help what's going on, but can his body handle it and keep him, you know, in the state to be able to kick on the weekend. So we'll have to see how that goes. Hoping and pulling for him though. Guys, I really appreciate it. Great questions. Like I said, you can definitely be a part of this if you'd like. We drop the mailbag every Wednesday. Fill it up, and then I'll pick some of the best questions, some of the better questions that I feel like you guys want to hear, and we have some fun. So it's my favorite part of the week. Makes the content super easy, and it's driven by what you guys really want to hear, which is definitely what I want to provide. So if you want to be a part of it, subscribe to thebarnauburn.com for only $1 for still a little bit longer for that first month. And then obviously it's $9.95 after that. Not only do you get to ask questions, but you got a lot of recruiting insight, team insight, great conversations on both sides of the fence. Got some positives, got some negatives. And I think for the most part, it's really cordial and we have a good time. So definitely come be a part of that community. Check it out. TheBarnAuburn.com. Guys, if you like this video, like it. If you like this channel, subscribe to it. We're going to be back every single day. We're closing in on a very, very big home game versus Vandy. A lot of recruiting, a lot of stuff, and we're going to talk about it all the way up to kickoff. So appreciate you listening. It's another episode of the Top Button Podcast. Stay buttoned.
Thanks for listening, and drive home safely.